Well, good afternoon. Again, my name is Kelly McDonough, and I'm here with you today to present developing a comprehensive wellness policy as part of a coordinated school health program on behalf of my team at School Health Connection. I am joining you all today from New Orleans. I have no relationships to disclose about this work. There are three main objectives to today's presentation: to identify the eight components of the CDC's coordinated school health framework, to describe the process for implementing a coordinated school health program, and to design a comprehensive school wellness policy that utilizes the coordinated school health framework. So just a little background about our program. School Health Connection was established in 2006 by the Louisiana Public Health Institute. So that is our overseeing organization. And we were formed in partnership with school health providers, with the mission of providing leadership and coordination to promote healthy school communities so that children and youth in New Orleans can reach their greatest potential. So School Health Connection, we kind of have two main buckets of work. One of the things that I would like to mention but will not be main part of this presentation today is that we work with school-based health centers in Orleans Parish to help them promote enrollment and utilization so that adolescents can access comprehensive health services there. But also, really the main focus of today's presentation is that since 2009, we've been working with schools to implement comprehensive school wellness programs. And to date, we've now worked with 20 schools to do that. And we have built our wellness program using the CDC's coordinated school health framework as a model. So for those of you that may not be familiar with this model, it's a framework that calls for an organized approach that recognizes that school wellness is multifaceted through eight interrelated components. You can look here at this diagram to see what those eight components are, and I will also read them to you. They are physical education, health services, nutrition services, healthy school environment, family and community involvement, psychological counseling and social services, and health promotion for staff. So the main steps to our school wellness program using this coordinated school health model are in this order. They are to attain administrative support, identify a school wellness coordinator, establish a school health advisory committee, conduct a school health assessment, develop and implement a school health improvement plan, and evaluate the implementation and results of the program. So one of our presenters has already given us some background on this, but I would just like to reiterate it because it really provides a basis for the rest of my conversation with you all today. And that is that the Child Nutrition and WIC Reauthorization Act of 2004, this piece of federal legislation did a few things, and among them, it expanded the availability of nutritious meals and snacks to more children in school, in outside school hours programs, and in childcare. It also improved the quality of foods in schools, and the main part that we're really going to look at today is that it also requires that all school districts with a federally funded school meals program develop and implement a school wellness policy that addresses nutrition and physical activity. The USDA has set forth some guidelines for these school wellness policies. Among them are to involve students, parents, representatives of the school board, representatives of the school food authority, school administrators, and the public in the development of the policy, to include goals for nutrition education, physical activity, and other school-based activities designed to promote student wellness, include nutrition guidelines for all foods available on the school campus during the day, and also to establish a plan for measuring and implementing the policy. However, we at School Health Connection, we recognize that expanding the scope of this policy beyond just the requirements for physical activity and nutrition can really have a greater impact on increasing positive health behaviors, not just for students, but for the overall school community. So that would include the students, the staff, as well as the families that are part of that community as well. So we work with school boards and charter management organizations to develop comprehensive school wellness policies with consideration to the coordinated school health model that I presented a few slides ago. So just also to kind of provide an additional point of clarity, because a question has already been raised about it, The federal legislation requires that each school district has a policy. So for each state, districts are kind of set up a little differently. And within those districts, between the district and the schools, they can come to an agreement if they feel that schools individually would need to have their own policy to reflect their different needs and wants. But as far as the legislation goes, they just need to exist at the district level. And without confusing you all too much, New Orleans is a really special case these days because following Hurricane Katrina and the acknowledgement that we had a really failing school system, we have had a really huge movement towards the charter school system. So we actually do not have a centralized school district these days. So when we do this work with schools, we don't do this once or twice. We do this time and time again because we have charter schools that are either just one school run by one charter board, or we have some that are a network of two schools, four schools, and I think the most we have under one entity right now is six. So just kind of to provide you some frame as I'm presenting this. So what I've done here today is just to provide you some examples. So we're talking about expanding these policies, but what do we actually want to have put into them? So what I've done is I've actually pulled out some actual content from policies that we've worked with some of our districts to pass. And these are just some examples for each of the eight components to, again, just kind of get you thinking to understand what it is I'm really talking about here today. So if we're looking at the physical education component, two examples are to provide daily recess for all students in K through 8th grades in addition to the required physical education time, to encourage teachers to incorporate at least 10 minutes of physical activity breaks into their classrooms each day. Looking at health education, they can ensure that qualified, certified health education teachers guide health education in all grades, provide age-appropriate, standards-based, comprehensive sexual health education to all students in grades 7 through 12. And I will say just a minor note on that one, that in itself kind of becomes a whole policy, and maybe next year we'll have a presentation on that. Looking at health services, an example is to apply a licensed registered school nurse at each school for at least half time, who is responsible for providing a variety of health services. Nutrition services operate all child nutrition programs with food service staff who are qualified according to current professional standards. Provide adequate time for breakfast and the recommended 30 minutes for lunch. Integrate nutrition education into classroom instruction by providing hands-on activities that are age-appropriate, culturally relevant, engaging, and fun. Looking at healthy school environment, which is something that was also voiced as a question earlier, points to be included there are conduct a comprehensive safety assessment for each school annually to guide facility improvements and prevent injury, crisis, or hazard. Establish a school health advisory committee at each school that meets bi-monthly to develop and implement school wellness policies and programs. For family and community involvement, provide opportunities for families and community members to engage in activities that promote healthy lifestyles. And finally, for the last two components, we have counseling, psychological, and social services. And two examples there are to provide all school staff annual professional development about identifying, preventing, and treating compassion fatigue. Employ a full-time licensed social worker or certified counselor at each school who is responsible for providing and coordinating counseling, psychological, and social services for students. And also going back to, how important it is to take care of our staff. If we want them to, if they're going to talk the talk, we want them to walk the walk. But we also recognize that just the sustainability of our staff is really important. So to administer an annual staff wellness interest and needs survey to inform the development and implementation of the school employee wellness program, and to provide opportunities for staff to engage in activities that promote healthy lifestyles. So as I started with, these are really just some examples, again, to just kind of get you thinking about what may be included in a policy. But we just really recognize and feel that going beyond the physical activity and the nutrition piece as required by the legislation really just creates in a more robust school wellness program, but really has an influence on that school culture change that we would like to see that will result in an overall healthier school environment for the students, staff, and families that that school serves. So my best attempt to summarize what we've learned through this, this is something at this point that really just looks at the process. And something that, working personally with these schools, I've seen that sometimes less is more. So what do I mean by that? That means that I would much rather see one of my districts pass a policy that, say, has 20 points of content versus 50 points of content. If that means that all 20 points of content, everyone is aware of what those are, they're actually being implemented, they're actually being enforced. It's much more important to have that, because otherwise, what's the sake of having just another policy for the sake of having a policy? So really working with the school health advisory committees that are established at the school, we really want to work together, be it within the school, at the district, network level, again, kind of whatever, frame you're working with, to really make sure that everyone is on the same page of that. You know, if you're talking about a network of five schools and one principal is not willing to commit to offering recess each day, you know, we'd rather not have it in the policy this year. We'd rather work towards it next year to really have that in there, as opposed to having a policy that no one is actually adhering to. On that same note, the process does not end with adoption. So say we've gone through the development of the policy, we've included all those points that we've mentioned already. We now need to actually adopt it, but it goes beyond that. It goes to communication of the policy, it goes to adherence, enforcement, and those are steps that are really important to be considered, because again, we don't want to just have another kind of bookshelf policy. So what goes along with that is also, when you're developing the policy, you might want to include those points of content in that as well, be it in an introduction or the conclusion, to really talk about how that policy will be communicated. Will it be posted on the website? Will it be hung in the school? Will it be sent home as part of the new student handbook each year? Also talking about how that policy will be reviewed. Will it be reviewed annually by the school health advisory committee and school leaders to really establish whether or not the policy is being adhered to, and whether, additions need to be made. We've worked with schools that really see progress, and as they build capacity, as the school years go on, they may be able to add points of content that they weren't prepared to add previously. And something else that was also already brought up here today is that there are varying degrees of commitment, just kind of in choosing the language of the policy. If you think back to some of the examples I presented, you can kind of write your policy from a level of we commit to, or we encourage, or we enable, or you can really kind of take it to a stronger level and talk about, we provide or we require. And that really goes back and kind of draws together all of these points, and just really making sure that you are aware of where your school or where your district is at. And each time you kind of consider a point of content to include, you want to think to yourself, where is our school at in readiness? Where are they at in buy-in? What does it take to actually implement this point of content? Think about the time, the cost, really just the feasibility of it all. And again, because you want to have something in there that's actually happening and actually making a change for your school culture to better it all. And I think finally, something that I kind of realized after the fact that really should kind of be the last bullet on this slide is you don't want to just tell them what to do, you want to tell them how to do it. So kind of an example by that is time and time again, we meet with schools and, I have principals saying, I would love to offer, healthier snacks or healthier meals at school functions, but the fact is I don't know where to go, or I'm concerned that these healthier options are not going to meet my price point. Whereas I know that, the Domino's offers these great deals to schools and we're getting $5 pies. Like, I hear these words all the time. So I think it's just really important that when you have your group together and you're working to develop this policy, to really also consider putting together some type of appendix or some type of resource guide that you can really hand out to your schools so that they can be like, okay, this is what they want us to do, and now very simply, this is how we can do it. And again, you can all really work, if you're working with your schools, to figure out, again, kind of where that level needs to be. Is it just putting together a list of like approved snacks and just, kind of general? Or is it taking it a step further and saying like, these are, the local restaurants or local grocery stores in the area, and these are their menus, we consider these approved items, and these are their prices. So those are really our lessons learned. We have schools that are currently implementing school wellness policies right now. So just kind of closing it out, I would like to just acknowledge a few of our partners who really made this presentation possible. I'd like to give a shout out to First Line Schools and Algiers Charter Schools Association, who are two of the main charter school networks that we worked with and whose policies I really pulled content from today. On the Louisiana Department of Education, we worked really closely with the LADOE to understand our sex ed legislation in Louisiana and really make sure that what we were including in our school wellness policy was in fact an adherence in state law, but really also to make sure that that language of the law was being turned into, you know, words that our schools can actually understand. And then finally, to our funder, the W.K. Kellogg Foundation. So I would like to say thank you. For those of you that are on social media, we have a School Health Connection Facebook page that is, quite frankly, really interesting and has lots of updates about our school wellness program in New Orleans. And if you are interested in hearing about our school wellness program in general, this presentation is actually followed by a poster session downstairs that just talks about our model in general. So that's kind of the more broader scope of what was presented here today. So I'll take any questions now, and also at the end, I have some handouts about our program if you're interested in those. So any questions?
You had mentioned that there's varying degrees of commitment for school, and then to assess the readiness for change. Do you have any like forms or evaluation like criteria that you follow to assess the readiness for change?
Yes. So I'm going to give you my best, quickest summary of our school wellness program in general. So kind of going back to those steps that I had said earlier, generally when we go into work with a school, the first thing that we want to do is identify someone to lead the school wellness initiative. Sometimes it's an outsider, one of us, a school wellness coordinator from our program, or we've also issued an RFA in the past where we've been able to award school districts funding to hire their own person. So from there, the next step is to facilitate the establishment of a school health advisory committee, and the tool that they use and that they complete together is the CDC School Health Index. So what that tool is, for those of you that aren't familiar with it, it's a 8-module assessment that has a module for each of those 8 coordinated school health steps, and just asks a wide range of questions, everything from, you know, does your school have an active school health advisory committee? Does your school have a school wellness policy? And together, the group scores those and really is able to identify their strengths and weaknesses from there. And then from those strengths and weaknesses, develops an action plan. So it's really a discussion-based process. So the readiness comes out of there. Does that answer that?
The shift you talked about?
The school health. It's SHI, School Health Index. That one, yes. Some people call the acronym all different names, but it's the School Health Index.
I was wondering what your experience has been, gotten any pushback from parents or community members, and how you dealt with that, or has it all been pretty positive when you start
dating? I think, again, they're part of that discussion, and I think that, you know, there is definitely pushback. I mean, there's also pushback from the school level as well, and just kind of knowing kind of when to pick your battles. So I think an example that I would give would be last year, the charter network of 5 schools, we had 4 schools on board with requiring recess each day and 1 school that really wasn't ready for it. And as a whole, the group really wasn't ready to let that go because they really wanted to see that, you know, be something that was institutionalized throughout their network, but they finally realized that that one school was just not ready and willing to do it, that they would rather just, you know, kind of shelve it until next year. So I think I would summarize that, yeah, by saying knowing when to pick your battles, but also going back to knowing that this is a living document, you know, that this is something that you want to revise and that your school and your network district, whatever level you're working at, you all can decide if this is something you're going to revisit annually, biannually, whatever meets your needs, because there will definitely be pushback. So it's, again, getting to that point of readiness. You see changes in time over attitude, changes in time over capacity. It's definitely something that is an ever-changing landscape. So parents are an active part of the School Health Advisory Committee. In general, in New Orleans, for a number of reasons, we actually have very low parent engagement, just in general, like outside of the wellness program, just in schools in general. But the School Health Advisory Committee is a group that really consists of people that represents all aspects of the school. So that would be like school leaders, teachers, nurse, you know, social worker, counselor, students, people from the food services department, janitorial staff, and parents. So we engage them there, but then also there are different wellness initiatives that also target kind of parents specifically. One of my schools last year offered a series of parent nutrition and education classes. One of the schools that has a garden, they do different monthly open garden day events where the parents can come in, participate in the garden, things like that. It's definitely probably the most challenging aspect of our work. And like I said, a lot of that is attributed to just the very complex nature of the New Orleans school system, as well as just some general cultural challenges we have.
Any other questions? Could we give Kelly a round of applause?